We're at a workstation every day, or we're at our computers, and we're dealing with chronic long-term stress that is literally sending signals to your digestive system to say, stop digesting. And so when I see my patients and when they're doing all the right things, when we've analyzed their gut microbiome, when they're eating healthy foods and they're not getting anywhere, I find we got to address the stress picture. And it can be a big game changer.
Hey everyone, I'm Jessie Johnstone.
And I'm Marae Froese. We are two curious people always talking to each other about ways to improve our health, keep our relationships strong, be better parents, and keep ourselves feeling confident.
If we aren't talking about the latest and greatest beauty procedure or how to handle a situation with our kids, we're messaging back and forth about the latest current event.
To help us work through all the noise and ensure we are becoming our best, most informed selves, we discuss a new topic with an industry expert every week on the podcast.
Every topic is on the table. There is no TMI in this space.
Good morning, Jessie.
Hi, Marae. How are you today?
I feel fantastic.
You do?
What's crazy is that I've actually felt the opposite of fantastic this whole week. Like I've been telling you, I've been like super overwhelmed.
And so you're in your third trimester now.
I'm in my third trimester. I just feel like every hour of my day is scheduled with something. I feel like I'm pulled in 10 different directions. I don't feel organized. I'm like a control, not a control freak, but I just like to feel like I have control over different parts of my life. And I just feel like things are slipping through the crack, as you know.
I do.
I've like dropped the ball on so many things. But yesterday, I turned a corner. I worked out yesterday. I power cleaned in the evening. This morning, I'm having wallpaper installed for my nursery. All before 9 a.m., I like re-cleaned, like had breakfast, had taken to school. I baked cookies, healthy cookies for the people coming to install the wallpaper.
Really nesting over here.
And I just feel like I'm okay. I got my groove back a little bit. I mean, it hasn't even been 24 hours, but
that's positive. That's
but
great.
I honestly think, at least for me, I can speak for myself, is like when you start doing little things, like little habits that you normally do that make you feel like you're on top of it, like working out, you know, organizing, cleaning, writing a schedule, it helps you get your groove back and it gives you that confidence and it just, yeah, feel good. How are you?
Have I ever told you about my bucket, how I see myself as a bucket?
No.
I see myself as a bucket and I love to be a full bucket. But the problem is when you keep your bucket full and things that are not planned happen, then all of a sudden you're like splashing out of your bucket.
Yes.
And so my thing is always to try to keep my bucket a little bit empty at the top so that when something unexpected happens, and I was talking to you earlier about, you know, my husband's and my schedules, some things happened and now I'm completely overbooked and I don't like that. You know, you and I are both, we just love our buckets full. So we're like kind of splashing over the edges at times.
That's a really good analogy because I just feel guilty if I have a little bit of room because I do usually leave a little bit of room at the top. And then if someone asks me, hey, can we grab lunch? Can you help me with this? Do you have time for this or whatever it is? And I know I have like maybe a little bit of allotted time. I feel guilty saying, no, I'm actually have a full week this week. And so my bucket is overflowing.
Yeah, it's
often,
splashing.
But not splashing. Overflowing sounds like positive.
Okay.
Splashing. Splish, splash. But not in a good way.
Yeah, it's overflowing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's totally me too. I'm always like, oh, it's that bucket's too full.
I do feel like the image of us right now totally represents our mood. I'm always in like workout clothes when we're recording or just 90% of the time. But I'm wearing this like beautiful.
Yeah, you look so beautiful today. You really do.
Yeah, like a beautiful like floral blue dress. And then
I'm in a tracksuit.
You just look like a dark cloud.
You know what? I listened to 3 podcasts this morning. And
so productive.
And one was about, you know, the food chain issues and what's going on in Russia and how that's impacted things. And it went back way before Russia and COVID even. But so then I listened to one on wastewater testing, which is how they often track like COVID spikes, but also many other things. So I was like, okay, this is all negative. It's all real. I was like, listen to something upbeat. So I decided to listen to Smartlist because I hadn't listened to Smartlist this week. And this man was on that's done several movies like Moneyball and several other ones. And it was really good and funny. And I really liked him. And then at the end, they ask him and he shares that in May, his daughter, was killed in an accident with her boyfriend. She was 19.
That's the worst.
It was. And I just think, like, I don't think, and I'm not the only person that's ever said this before, but I don't think we're taught how to handle grief. Like, we don't know how to deal with grief. And I was just so upset about that, because I just thought, like, those are the kind of things that you don't understand how people get through them. And you just think, and I've said this to you before, like, it's like the world should stop.
Yeah.
It's like the world should stop. And you'd think, how is everybody continuing on? But it does. Everything goes on. And I just was like, I hope at one point we do an episode on grief.
Absolutely. I mean, you know this, like, one of my best friends, her husband passed away last year, and he was a good friend of mine. And, you know, I was even texting with her last night about life goes on. And, you know, you still find joy and happiness, and you have to keep going. You know, you have kids or whatever, but you can be both. What I texted her was like, I know you can be both happy and sad and grieving at the same time. Those are both like two really real emotions, and you aren't prepared for it, and you don't know what's right. I mean, there is no right way to deal with it, but I think I would really love to have an episode where we talk to an expert on dealing with grief. Because even when I went through it, I was like listening to podcasts and just like, how do I be there for a friend who's going through this? How do I deal with my own grief and trauma?
And I also think, like, that's obviously the big moments, the unbelievable moments of grief. But there's also grief of, you know, I think why sometimes marriages are so devastating to people when they end is because it's the death of a dream. It's the death of a plan. And that's the same as when people lose their jobs. It's like you have this plan ahead of you and this vision and dream of how everything was supposed to go. And suddenly it's destroyed. And how do you move on? So anyways, that's super downer. So sorry with my gray tracksuit. But
that's okay. I'm usually wearing a gray tracksuit, so that's why I'm allowed to say that.
Yeah, I was thinking about that this morning. So we had a terrific podcast with Dr. Naomi. Do you want to tell everybody about that?
We interviewed Dr. Naomi Demian, and I was on a high. I was giggly the entire time. Like, I left recording and I called Dallas and I just said, you know, this is the type of episode where I would serial send it to all my friends, being like, you need to listen to this, because we touched on so many important questions that we are always discussing, like factors that lead to gut issues and like, what should we do with organic food or what should we be eating and how important it is, and the truths about different testing and methods of testing and what's accurate and what testing is out to lunch. And you were really informed from that episode, hey?
Oh, for sure. Because I mentioned that one of my children has had some issues and never even knew of that testing. I thought it was very informative. Yeah, she had lots of really practical advice that I think everybody can implement in their lives. And I thought she was really realistic, because she'll get into it and everybody will hear she talks about organic vegetables, but she, you know, she made it practical. She knew that groceries are expensive and you can't always do that, but it was just being mindful about what you're eating, what you're putting into your body, and how that impacts everything. So I'm excited for people to hear it. I hope we have her on again. I think there's so many more questions and things to discuss. I know there's lots of stuff I'd want to ask.
Absolutely. And even the effects of sleep and stress on your body, on your hormones, and on your gut. We often are told how important it is to sleep and rest and to reduce stress levels. And like you had talked about before, even when you were trying to get pregnant and you weren't able to get pregnant for months, and then you quit your job that was really stressful and you were able to get pregnant, like, even how stress affects your hormones and your gut health and the scientific backing behind that. So I think this will be a really informative episode. I hope it's one of those episodes that you get excited about and you find practical tools that you can apply to your life where you're like, okay, I can do this. I can start working towards a healthier life.
And I hope when people listen to it, if they have questions, if it prompts questions or there's something they're dealing with that wasn't addressed, that they'll DM us on Instagram. And we'll get somebody on.
Yeah. Enjoy the show. Share it with your friends, because I think this will help a lot of people. Enjoy.
Let's hope things perk up for me.
Yeah. Good morning, Jesse. We are so excited because today we are interviewing Dr. Naomi Demian, who is a naturopathic doctor from Toronto who specializes in gut health. Good morning, Naomi.
Good morning. I'm so happy to be here today.
How are you doing today? I guess it's about noon right now for you.
Yeah, I'm feeling good. I'm excited to be here.
We're glad to have you. Thank you for being with us.
This is such an exciting podcast because it is a topic that circulates our friend groups all the time. I feel like if you're a woman and you're between the ages of like 20 and 55, this is something you probably thought about at some point. We're talking about gut health today. Naomi, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, your practice, what you specialize in?
Sure. Yeah. So I am from Toronto. I've been born and raised here. My practice, I'm a naturopathic doctor, and I would say that I practice using a functional medicine model. And to me, functional medicine means holistic and individualized. And so, I mean, mainstream medicine is very compartmentalized. You can see a gastroenterologist, you can see a cardiovascular surgeon, and you know, there's specialties and there's reasons for that, but rarely do people kind of take a step back and see how all the parts of the body work together. Like, how does gut health affect hormones? How does liver health affect gut health, et cetera, et cetera? And so to me, functional medicine is understanding how all the body parts interplay and how to best support the individual. And so individualized to me means two people can have the same diagnosis, but how did you get there? And so understanding the processes behind that. And it's not about a diagnosis, it's understanding what's happening with you. Like Marie can have a very different treatment plan than someone else who has IBS and et cetera. So that being said, what I end up seeing a lot of is chronic issues, people who are falling through the cracks. And like you said, a lot of gut health, digestive issues, IBS, people with chronic fatigue, hormonal imbalances, things like that. That's what I specialize in and what I really enjoy seeing in my practice.
Okay, that's so interesting because just seeing it from a holistic approach, like I know for myself, I've had gut issues and I've never really, we've talked about this before, I've never really got to the source of it. I mean, now I think after taking my breast implants out, I think that might have been something that had to do with it. But every time I've seen any practitioner, it's been like just one random test that's supposed to paint a picture for my health. And it really hasn't helped me very much. We were just talking about this. I feel like almost every single one of my friends has some type of gut health issue. And it's always a topic in our friend groups about different protocols, bloating, weight gain, they're having insomnia, low libido, and they are going to every naturopath under the sun to try and get help. Why do you think that we're seeing an increase in gut issues? It feels like everyone we know is suffering from some kind of gut health issue. Are we more aware that that's a thing now? Is it more prevalent now because of our lifestyles and diet?
Totally. And so, I mean, there's definitely some things I want to highlight on, and I think it will shed a bit of light as to why this is. Like, there's some extrinsic and intrinsic factors. And so, like, for me, extrinsic factor largely means food. Like, unless you're making intentional choices with your food, I think that you might come into some problems. I mean, you go into the grocery store today and you can pick out any type of vegetable, any type of culture, any type of produce is available at your fingertips. And I think that comes at a price. Like, what have we done to be able to have everything at our fingertips at any time of any season, anywhere in the world? And I think we have lost the quality of food. And so, I mean, starting with processed food, like you pick up just like, you know, like I love a good chicken curry. And sometimes I don't have time to make curry sauce from scratch, but I pick up a curry, you know, pre-made curry product, and I can't understand half of the things in the ingredient list. And so I think that convenience is an issue. And then just the way we're mass producing products these days. And so, you know, I'm going to pick on corn, but really it's all crops. And so corn, you know, corn is maybe totally fine, but you take corn, and in the 1990s, they changed the weight, like for the sake of mass production, they changed the pesticide and the herbicides that they use. And it's called Roundup. So Roundup is very good at killing off the critters and stuff that grow in the soil. But if it's killing off the critters in the soil, like what is it also doing to your gut?
Is it killing the nutrients as well?
Or yeah, it's causing inflammation in your gut, but it's also killing off your gut microbiome. We know now that Roundup causes liver issues, digestive issues, even cancer, and yet it is used across the board. So let's go back to corn. So we're using corn, we're growing it, we're spraying it with pesticides. Guess what? The pesticide is so strong, it kills off the corn. So what do? We genetically modify the corn to be able to withstand the strain, the pesticide. So now you're eating something, you know, for the sake of like, you know, I want a big juicy corn or a big juicy blueberry or the best, you know, the best of the best. So they're changing the DNA fragments. And I mean, I chose corn because I think a lot of my patients, and I don't know if anyone here can relate, is people will often tell me, like, I see corn in my stool. It's like literally your body doesn't know, like it can't even digest it. And then we take corn and you pick up any type of processed food and it has corn syrup in it. It has corn oil in it. So we're taking something, we've spraying it with pesticides, we're changing the nature of it, and then we're dumping it in all our processed foods because it's shelf stable. And so what's that going to do? Like, we're going to have a breaking point, and all these foreign foods and extra pesticides and toxins, I think, are playing a role on our digestive health. And then, you know, those are extrinsic factors, and intrinsic factors are just your regular gut microbiome. And because of increased antibiotic use, because of the foods we're eating, because of the stress, our internal, you know, gut microbiome is maybe not the best these days. And it's just creating a perfect storm. The foods we're eating and what's going on internally is creating a recipe for disaster. And so, like, for me, it's not about a perfectionistic diet. It's not about the best protocol. It's really about understanding, you know, what is food today and how can I make the best choices? Like, you know, maybe it's not 100%, but like, how do you get to about like 50% lower toxic load and foods in their most like natural, least toxic, the way they were meant to grow out of the ground? Like, how do we get to that root? And I think once people start eating like that, they start healing.
Wow. Okay. So do you think that you could, if you were to add like a probiotic to your diet, unless you actually change your diet, it's not going to do anything? Because a lot of people think that they're making a big difference by adding probiotics to their diet.
Or like, I'm even thinking about, so is the route to go with that? And I never, ever correlated, you know, how corn is growing and then the corn syrup angle. Like, I always think of corn syrup as just like, you don't want it because it's sugar. But I forgot the whole component of how these crops are coming to be, all the chemicals. But what do you say then about there's, you know, the probiotic angle, but buying organic? Are you an advocate for buying organic food or?
Yeah. And I just had a patient yesterday and they were like, but organic can still have pesticides and herbicides. And I totally agree. Organic is not perfect. But in terms of,
I didn't know that.
It's not perfect, but there is substantially less pesticides and herbicides used. They have to. If you're buying organic produce, I know farmers and they have to meet a strict criteria to keep levels down. And so, I mean, the risk is they're making way less amount of crops. And so the price is higher. And so for me, I mean, a really good source for that is the Environmental Working Group. Every year they dish out the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15. And the Dirty Dozen, I would either avoid if it's too costly for you or buy organic. And then the Clean 15 tends to be the ones that have the less pesticides and herbicides. So that's a really good place to start. It's not like I've tried to go all organic and it stressed me out. But like, hey, can I do this 50 or 60%? Is there some organic chicken on sale this week? Is there, you know, where can I buy local? Can I buy, you know, maybe I'm not going to get blueberries out of season or apples out of season, but when they're in season, they're cheaper. And so making those kind of choices. But I am a big advocate for organic. I think it is one of the things that is contributing. Those pesticides, Roundup is contributing, I believe, largely to our digestive issues.
Okay, so I have a question about organic produce. This is something I think I might have made this up in my head. I don't know if this is true or not. But would it be fair to say that if, like, I just, for some reason, I just think of pesticides being sprayed on produce. So if there's some kind of shell, like, for example, or bananas that are non-organic better, and like avocados, because there's a shell that if you can't get organic, that's fine, versus like grapes or blueberries.
Exactly. Like, think about how little blueberries are in the surface level of spraying. I'm totally with you. Things are in a shell, and you'll see on that Environmental Working Group list, it's normally the fruit that are very, you know, smaller, that tend to be the dirtiest, and the things like that, things that are in shell that tend to have lower pesticides. And so you're totally right. Having that protective layer is important. Even the way you clean your vegetables. Before, I used to just spray water. Now I'm like soaking them for a while. Like,
If it's organic, do you do that as well?
Yeah, I would. Like I said, to me, organic isn't perfect. It's just greatly reduced. And so organic or non-organic, really clean your vegetables is going to be important.
I just want to bring up a couple of things. One, certainly recognizing the cost of organic produce, it is more expensive, and that's for a reason. It's more difficult to get those larger crops. But just for anybody that hasn't ever heard of those lists, the Dirty Dozen is the 12 fruits and vegetables that are most impacted by the chemicals they're grown with, correct? And then
exactly
the other ones are less impacted. And the other issue to think about, and I deal with this in my flower farming, is what ends up happening to the soil is over time, it's not just that it's just sprayed on the crops. It destroys the quality of the soil that year after year, the crops are grown in. And they become completely devoid of the nutrients.
Exactly. And I mean, I think we also see a lot of magnesium deficiency, and they link that to the quality of the soil being reduced over the years. And so that's just one nutrient of many. But yes, you're absolutely right.
I feel like I just learned so much. Okay. So I think we talked about this before, about how there's so many different methods of testing. Like I know for me personally, especially when I was younger, I'd go to any random naturopath that I just heard of. And I spent thousands of dollars on testing. And I know a lot of my friends have as well, to figure out what are these intolerances and gut issues that they're having. And they want like an actual prognosis. I mean, I feel like some of the tests are a little bit out to lunch. And totally. I have paid so much money for tests that told me I'm allergic to absolutely everything under the sun. And I was a lot younger, so then I avoided all those foods like peppers and avocados and nuts where I know I could eat them and I feel totally fine. Can you tell me which tests you would say are out to lunch and which tests that you would have that are like that you would vouch for?
Yeah, totally. So, I mean, for me, a good test is able to be objective and it's able to be reproducible. So if I give you a stool test and you do that stool test 10 times, the same results are going to come up 10 times. And same with food intolerances. Like if you do a food intolerance test a few times, every time you do it, the same food intolerances should come up. And especially with food intolerances, we just see that's not the case. That reproducibility of results don't occur. And there's factors like, yes, there's actual lab factors, but I think there's also, you know, your immune system and what could be going on there and other things to take into place. And so, I mean, for any test, those are two things I'm looking for, as objective as possible and as reproducible as possible. But another really important piece, and what you're saying is, I went to any naturopath, I listened to any test, is a test is always just a piece of a puzzle. And it's about seeing the bigger picture. And so when someone comes up and their food intolerances are through the roof, instead of putting them on another type of stringent diet, or it's asking the question, why? Like, why do you have so many food intolerances? Is there something going on with your body's ability to digest food appropriately? Is there something going on with your immune system? Is there something going on with gut microbiome? So it's able to take that piece of the picture and not get pigeonholed by it, but seeing it's just a part. And so I just have so many patients that have come to see me when they've been on these stringent diets, and I find that it's just so unrealistic. And like, it's like telling someone, oh, you have seasonal allergies. Well, don't leave your home from May to June. The only rooms you can go in your house are your kitchen and your bathroom because you're allergic to your basement. Instead of asking the question, why? Like, why do you have this? And let's work with the immune system. Let's try to dig a bit deeper and make things as pleasant for you, or like symptom managed as possible, so that you can live a realistic lifestyle.
So how do you do that? So if I were to come to you and I had, you know, bloating, like I have all these intolerances, I bloated, I'm fatigued, I have low libido, I'm having a difficulty sleeping, which I know you said that there are a few tests that you will do. So what are those tests and why did you pick them?
So when it comes to digestive health, the tests that I will normally start with running are more like understanding the gut microbiome, because I think then I can influence. So a good stool test to me will tell me if you have pathogenic bacteria, like pathogenic microbes, like bacteria, fungal, parasites, viruses. It will tell me a snapshot of your ecosystem in your gut microbiome. So not only do you have pathogenic bacteria, but do you have a healthy ecosystem? Are you producing a diverse and plentiful gut microbiome? A good stool test can also give me an idea of your immune system. There's immunoglobulins that are surveillance for infection. So if people have low immune function, they can be predisposed to pick up any type of bacteria infection, as well as inflammation markers and whatnot. So that's normally a good place to start. So I'll do a stool test that analyzes the gut microbiome. I will sometimes test for other types of gut issues like SIBO or leaky gut markers. I'm rarely testing for food sensitivities. Maybe once we've corrected all those things. And like you said, like if there's other issues like stress and hormones, like let's look at all those things. Then maybe we get to the food sensitivities. Because if we can work on that terrain, sometimes we can make much bigger changes than just a food sensitivity test.
I think that's so interesting because I have spent thousands of dollars over the years on figuring out what my gut issues are, and I've never once done a stool sample, which makes so much sense with what you're saying. But that's just so crazy.
Okay. Test is just a piece of the picture. Yes. Like, it's also understanding and using like clinical knowledge and experience and really understanding the individual to properly assess them and not getting pigeonholed, like not even getting pigeonholed down a stool test. It's seeing it as a part of the picture,
right,
and addressing the whole person.
So. Right. Okay. So you mentioned leaky gut, you mentioned IBS. Can you clarify, because I know that these words get thrown around a lot. Can you clarify the difference between SIBO, IBS, and leaky gut? I don't know if I'm forgetting any other major gut issues. Those are the ones I'm hearing a lot.
Let's start with IBS. IBS, to me, is a very common diagnosis that my patients will get from a doctor. And so IBS, like the criteria for it is alternating between constipation and diarrhea. It's also a diagnosis of exclusion. So it normally means that your doctor has run out some of the more serious things like a parasite or irritable bowel disease or acid reflux and has said, hey, you have digestive issues and I don't know what's up. So a lot of my patients come in with that, but that is just a diagnosis. People can have IBS symptoms for so many different reasons and there's no IBS treatment. And so
like
so
stress, could stress be?
Yeah. Stress or like lack of digestive enzymes or lack of magnesium can cause constipation. And so it's so different how you might approach it. So to me, it's like, hey, I got some more digging to do when a patient comes in to see me with an IBS diagnosis. Leaky gut is a bit of an explanation. So leaky gut, it gives us an idea of what might be going wrong. And so the medical term for leaky gut is actually called intestinal permeability. So you have your gut lining, like you have your small and large intestine, and there's an epithelial lining. It's made out of cells, and those cells should be tightly together. There shouldn't be any kind of gaps between them. You know, they're tight junctions and there's nothing can go past them. When someone has leaky gut, those tight junctions come apart. You know, little food particles can exit the intestinal lining, get into the bloodstream and cause immune reactions. And so when people have leaky gut, they release a protein called zonulin. So you can actually measure if someone has leaky gut by measuring zonulin. And so what I see a lot are when people come in with those food sensitivities, we're checking zonulin to see like, hey, do you actually have leaky gut? Because if you heal the gut lining, then some of those food sensitivities can go away.
So is that through blood tests where you would find zonulin?
Yes, yeah. It's a blood test.
For leaky gut, are there common symptoms of it? And thank you so much for explaining what it is, because I had no idea that was going to be one of my questions.
Yeah, so I would say cramping, bloating, diarrhea, even constipation. Causes of leaky gut could be things like gut dysbiosis, SIBO.
What's gut dysbiosis?
In your large intestine, you have good and bad bacteria. Think of it like an ecosystem. So you have, you know, if you have frogs and you have flies and you have birds, none of those are an issue. But if you don't have enough frogs, now you have flies overgrowing. And so that's dysbiosis, an overgrowth of what something that at normal levels would be completely fine are now overgrowing and causing issues. And so when you have that, it can injure the epithelial lining of the gut and cause leaky gut. SIBO, which I'll get to, can cause leaky gut. Those pesticides that we talked about, the Roundup, can cause injury to the cell. Anything that's inflammatory, stress can even cause, to some extent, leaky gut because it's perpetuating inflammation. And so once you address those and heal the gut lining, you know, that can really improve somebody's symptoms. SIBO is specific. It's small intestinal bacteria overgrowth. It is a specific type of bacteria that exists in your small intestine. When you think of your gut microbiome, it's in your large intestine. There shouldn't be any bacteria in your small intestine. But some people have a bit of, for some reason, there's overgrowth. And when people have motility issues, so you're not thinking about it, but when you swallow, your digestive system is creating like muscle contractions to digest your food. So a lot of people can have dysfunction with that. And so it can cause the gut microbiome to get into the small intestine and cause issues. And you get this small intestinal bacteria overgrowth in a place where they shouldn't be. Symptoms of SIBO. So SIBO can look a lot like IBS because it can cause either constipation and diarrhea. But in my experience, patients will also have nausea. They'll have bloating that's completely not correlated with food. In fact, some of my patients will say, I wake up in the middle of the night and I just feel like my stomach is turning around because the bacteria in the small intestine are fermenting food, even good food, like actually vegetable, a lot of vegetables, the SIBO will get to and ferment. And so symptoms like that, nausea, bloating, not related with food, cramping, and then the alternating bowel movements with severe diarrhea or constipation. That's kind of the way to separate SIBO, IBS, and leaky gut, and even gut dysbiosis.
How do you test for SIBO?
It's a breath test. It's actually not very expensive. It's a breath test, but it is a bit of a pain in the butt because you have to blow in a tube for 20 minutes for about 3 hours. And so
20 minutes?
Every 20 minutes for 3 hours. Because it's tracking, the movement in the small intestine.
Okay, that was great. That was such a good description of each of those. I learned so much. Do you feel like you're learned?
Well, I'm actually sitting here really kind of mad because I have one of my children has stomach issues and we've been to many people about it. And it's always, it's stress, it's stress, it's stress. And of course, I'm sure stress aggravates it, but there's something going on. And then it's like, it's IBS. We've never had a stool test. We've never been offered any of these things. And it's been quite debilitating at times.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. I think the mainstream medicine is really ruling out, is this more life or death? Is this a inflammatory autoimmune condition? But once they've ruled that out, I don't think there's much they can do. And especially with kids, they love to be kids will get stomach aches when they're stressed. And so it's an easy kind of thought. But,
and I just also want to say this is why it's so important to do your research and know which practitioner you're going to, whether it's a naturopathic doctor, a chiropractor, a physio, they're not all the same. And it's really important to go to someone that you understand their background, what type of work they do, how holistic they are in their approach and their experience before you just put your hands and trust in anyone that you'll just see. Don't you agree, Naomi?
Yeah, totally. There's definitely specialties and people who have experience in one area and people who are more general. I don't see fertility. That's not something I do. I would give very basic recommendations for that. And so I'm also quite good at being I am not the right person for you. I like to have a good referral source for a lot of the conditions that I don't treat. So,
right. Okay. So if you had a patient that came to you with the most common symptoms, which I don't know if you can agree with this, that are mostly bloating, fatigue, weight gain, low libido, where would you start them on?
And are those kind of the most common symptoms?
I don't have a very common practice. I see people who have seen a lot of naturopaths and who have seen a lot of doctors. I see people who can be a lot more debilitated, but I would say that's a pretty safe, I do like that list. You definitely see that. I think that's probably relatable within our friend group or people getting into their 30s or 40s for sure. We'll start to see these symptoms. And so there's two things that I would do. And so first, I do want to talk about stress and rest, but I just want to talk about it in the context of what happens when, and I'm not talking about a kid being stressed. I'm talking about chronic stress. So that's different. Before, stress was a mechanism. If you think about it, when we were hunters and gatherers, we would see a bear. So there's a bear in front of you. I am stressed. And so stress is protective. It's telling my body, stop digesting, stop circulating blood to the internal organs, get them to the periphery, dilate your pupils and run away from that bear. So what's changed in our day and age is that we don't see bears that often and we don't have acute stress, but I think many people suffer from chronic stress. And so we're at a workstation every day or we're at our computers and we're dealing with chronic long-term stress that is literally sending signals to your digestive system to say, stop digesting. And so when I see my patients and when they're doing all the right things, when we've analyzed their gut microbiome, when they're eating healthy foods and they're not getting anywhere, I find we got to address the stress picture. And it can be a big game changer. And so, even libido, and I say stress and rest, because when I mean rest, it's before, you would cook a meal and, from scratch and you have hours of smelling it. You start preparing your palate. Your palate starts making enzymes, salivary enzymes. Your stomach starts making enzymes, digestive enzymes, hydrochloric acid, bile, all these things that are going to support the digestive process. And in our day and age, we're eating our lunch in the break room. I have 10 minutes to eat and I have to go back out to another patient. And we're so removed from that that restful process of eating and even sex. Like, it's the same thing. Like, you can't just turn on your libido after a day of running around with kids, getting to soccer practice,
getting
into the gym. And then you have to take the time. And so, like, how do we take the time to eat our food? How do we take the time to make love? Like, it's not something that it just happens in our busy schedules. And I tell all of my patients, or I challenge them, like, you charge your phone every single day. Like, do you charge yourself? Like, are there times that you stop and rest? Because you need to rest to digest. So I do think there is definitely, like, how do you get your body to work for you for the digestive process? And then when I do see these patients who can't eat any food and they're in that, I would call it like a crisis mode. They're tired. Everything they're eating to, they're reacting to. The place I would start is getting them off those processed foods, inflammatory foods. There is no perfect diet for everyone. And I do try to individualize it, but really getting back to whole foods, you know, how they come out of the ground. In their most natural form. And you are eliminating foods, but you're also focusing on eating a diverse amount of vegetables, protein, carbohydrates that are good for you. And that's normally where I'm starting. And a lot of people, once they've removed certain inflammatory foods and are focusing on a good diet, I would say 60 to 70% of them improve. And then there's the, you know, what we've talked about, that is more SIBO or gut dysbiosis or leaky gut. Once they've done that diet, and if they're like, hey, I feel a little bit better, but not much. Okay, now we explore more. But I would say that's where I would start, is a good diet and stress management techniques.
So for the average person who doesn't have like chronic gut issues or like insane bloating, but you know, they bloat here and there, they're finding that as they get older, they're getting more fatigued. Are there certain supplements that you would recommend? Okay, everyone should have this in their nutrition. And then the other question I have is, there's a lot of misinformation about timing with food. Like, you know, there's intermittent fasting, then there's more of like the bodybuilder approach where it's small meals continuously throughout the day. Do you find that it's important to give your gut time to rest, and it's actually more beneficial to have like 3 meals a day or more of an intermittent fasting approach to your nutrition?
Okay, that's a great question.
I know, and it's again, there's lots there.
It becomes individualized, but let me break it down a bit. So to me, fasting, to be honest, okay, if your hormones are perfect and you don't have high cortisol, because when you fast, you're putting your body into a stress state. So for some people who are already really stressed, it's the worst thing you can do, intermittent fasting or fasting. But let's say you don't have that. Fasting is actually amazing. It does reset your gut microbiome. It changes your inflammatory cytokine profile. It can basically reset. Like, people who can do a 2 or 3 day fast, you know, if you're in a healthy state to be able to do that, it can do wonders for your whole system. But I think you need to approach that cautiously. And in terms of, like you said, the bodybuilder eating regularly. So for someone with SIBO, I talked a little bit about motility. Without thinking, your body is creating muscle movements. And so there's actually 4 phases to these muscle movements. There's really quick muscle contractions, then slower, then a break, then a big sweep. A lot of people with IBS and with SIBO, they don't go through the 4 stages well. And if you're not going through the 4 stages well, like, every time you eat, you're interrupting that. And so for some people, if that is something that's going on for them, they actually do need to break up their food, where they're eating every four hours or even 6 hours. So eating like 3 square meals a day, and snacking is the worst thing they can do. And so, I mean, again, you have to take into account the individual. I would never just meet someone and be like, do intermittent fasting or do a 30-hour fast. Like, I would work with them, and you need to make sure blood sugar is normal and cortisol. But it can be a game changer. Like, it is a mainstay treatment for some people with autoimmune conditions. And so it just needs to be done properly and appropriately.
Okay. And what's your approach on coffee?
Oh, okay. So coffee, I don't take people off coffee.
Thank you.
But I do try to buy organic. And yeah, so I think that makes the difference. And I also think if someone's completely depleted and they're relying on coffee, then we definitely challenge that. Just like if someone's reliant on sugar or they can't live without their wine, like, it's normally the thing you love the most that you got to get rid of. And so,
totally,
you know, but if someone's completely burnt out and they need 3 coffees, then we would probably address that. But for the normal person, I think 1 or 2 coffees a day, that is organic and taken within a certain time frame, like not in the evening or whatnot, to affect your circadian rhythm, I'm okay with coffee.
So no Starbucks.
Yeah, Starbucks doesn't have organic yet. Like, what are they thinking? But every time I go and I ask, they say it's coming. So hopefully soon.
For the last 10 years, it's coming.
And I don't care about the one-off. Like, if I met with someone and we go to Starbucks, maybe I'll have a coffee. It's more what I'm doing every day. Because at one point I was having a Starbucks every day, and I've changed that now. You know,
right.
It's more the lifestyle and what you're putting into your body daily than the birthday party or the coffee date that you have on occasion. It's about just bringing down the load and not perfection.
What about salt?
Salt is not something I normally address in terms of it being an issue. A lot of my patients have autonomic dysfunction, so they feel lightheaded and dizzy going from standing to sitting, things like that. And so salt is actually recommended in high dosages for that. To me, it's more the processed food and eating all the chemicals and preservatives. Salt, yes, for sure. If you're having too much salt, it can cause cardiovascular and increased blood pressure. But
there's good salt, correct? Like, it actually... is good for you, like, and is good for your brain health as well.
I think for me with salt, what you're saying has been really great, because I always think salt so bad. But the salt that's bad that I've had to address is the salt in fast food. And the issue there is it's the fast food. It's that it's, you know, it's not, you know, it's refined sugar and it's full of other chemicals. And all of that is really what I need to kind of think about.
Totally. Totally. That's for you and likely your age group. And then where salt might be an issue is someone who has like decreased kidney function or an elderly gentleman with high blood pressure. You know, that's where it gets more individualized. But I would say today and in the diseases we're seeing in the population that I'm seeing, salt is not the mainstay. It's like what you're saying.
I think it was very much a 90s phase when like people who grew up in the 80s and 90s who grew up on so much processed junk food, fast food, and then they were so concerned about like high cholesterol, and it was a way of branding too. So like on packages, it was like no sodium, and everyone stopped putting egg yolks in their eggs and took it out, where that's actually, we need cholesterol for function, and it's exactly. So good for our bodies and for our health. And when I see someone not having egg yolks, I'm like, why aren't you having egg
you
yolks?
Said this to me the other day.
So that to her, she's like, I asked her what she has for breakfast every day, and she said egg whites. And I'm like, why? And I think it's just a way people were trained, especially if they grew up, you know, with that diet mentality that you're decreasing your cholesterol, you're decreasing your sodium, egg yolks are bad. And I'm like, that's something that's so good for you.
Exactly. And I think you know, that's exactly what I think. Like, I think in the 60s and 70s, I mean, cardiovascular was on the rise, the cardiovascular risk. And so with that, they discovered, okay, if you decrease your fat, you know, everything was low fat and everything was about salt. And that was to combat the cardiovascular risk. Well, we've come a long way in supporting cardiovascular risk. And again, when I'm talking to elderly people, it is a different type of diet for them. But in our day and age, we're seeing the digestive issues. We're seeing the kids with eczema. We're seeing all the repercussion of these low fat, you know, like processed types of vegetable oils are now causing more immune reactions and gut issues. And now it's kind of swung to different types of things that are emerging and issues. And so that's why treatment and dietary protocols or dietary advice are changing.
I have a question. You mentioned this really quickly. You said kids with eczema and you said low-fat diet. Are those correlated at all?
Or well, they stopped using like fat lard and they started making they started using much more vegetable oils, which can be more inflammatory. And so things like canola oil and sunflower oil and whatnot got replaced for, you know, stop using your bacon fat and your stop eating egg yolks, use these saturated fats that are more of an issue, polysaturated.
Does that cause eczema?
Well, it's more now we're seeing more inflammatory foods in general. And so and the way we process foods to be. So I think more it's about overall inflammatory foods. And yeah, I totally think those oils are more inflammatory foods. Like the types of oils I normally recommend are avocado oil, olive oil, and coconut oil. Yes. And really not especially
grass-fed butter.
Exactly. Yeah, grass-fed butter is good too.
And that's another one though. I just had a conversation with a friend last night about eczema and kids. I feel
like
there's so,
that's why I asked you.
I feel there's so many kids that have such terrible eczema now. It's awful.
Yeah. And I think that has to do, I think, with the gut microbiome. And they also say like the clean hypothesis, right? Like we're not exposing our kids to dirt. We're not taking them outdoors. Like, they're not getting dirty. And so they're not building immune tolerance. So every time your kid gets dirty or fights off an infection, the body is saying, hey, this, you know, this is good. This is bad. It's, you know, with COVID, they're not exposed to any infection, which is, I mean, you don't want kids to get COVID, but they're not getting sick and they're not out in nature and getting dirty. And so the immune system is so confused. And so when it's confused, now it sees things that should be absolutely not an issue and it's creating an inflammatory response. And so
that's so interesting.
What is a symptom that people have that you see that they are really surprised to learn is related to their gut? Because I hear all these symptoms and I'm thinking, I don't ever connect that to my gut. Like, I think it's something else. Is there something that you can think of that people are like, I had no idea that would be related to what I'm eating? I mean, even the libido stuff, like I'm thinking, oh, that's your hormones. You know, I don't connect the two.
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, a lot of autoimmune conditions, like your immune system starts in your gut. So like, yeah, so psoriasis or Hashimoto's, like if people have thyroid issue, to say like, hey, this could start in your gut, that can sometimes be surprising, but your body is attacking itself and creating antibodies to your thyroid. And now your thyroid is low. Why is your body creating these antibodies? It starts in the gut. And so that could be one.
I mean, almost anything can be related at this point.
Yeah, there's so much research in the gut microbiome field because we're just like, even, oh, I know, like diabetes, like your gut microbiome and the makeup of your gut microbiome can predispose you to something like diabetes later in life, obesity, and the autoimmune conditions, I think, are big. And so I think that can be very surprising because, and even when patients come and see me and they're like, well, I just want to get rid of my digestive issues. But, and for sure I do, like you want to give someone resolve, but it's also a sign that there's dysfunction and that it could be affecting you systemically. And so, you know, I don't want to just mask that or give you a pill that makes it go away. I want to genuinely heal it and get to the root cause.
So if you had a couple tips, just because I think sometimes people do get intimidated by the organic angle because it is so expensive. So if so, we've talked about the Dirty Dozen. So try to look at that and see what's on that list and try to just kind of avoid those specific things as much as possible. But if there's a couple other things that you would say, make sure you're doing these things as much as possible, what would that be?
Like organic related?
Yeah, or just in general for your health, for your gut health.
Okay. So when it comes to organic, yeah, like making the produce and if you can make the chicken or the meats that you're getting organic as much as possible. And honestly, don't get sucked into organic. Sometimes there will be like articles that come out or research that show organic is not different from non-organic. And they're normally referencing the packaged stuff that you're literally spending like $12.99 for organic pack of chips. Like really
trying.
Yeah. And like pick up ingredients. And like, if you can read the ingredient list and you recognize those, then you can purchase that. I mean, and they're healthy, you know, yeah. So the best thing for your gut microbiome, like the best thing to help support your gut microbiome, to increase your vegetable intake, but to diversify your vegetable intake. You know, some people will eat the same four vegetables and that's about it. And, you know, they're eating vegetables every day, so it's good, but it's actually changing up your vegetable and your fruit. Every different vegetable will have a fiber that feeds another type of good and protective gut microbiome. And so that's one thing that you can do is to circle through the vegetables you're having. And if you have young kids, you can throw in different types of vegetables in a smoothie and get them to eat it that way. And so that's definitely one tip. Eating whole foods and for your gut microbiome it's soluble fiber as well. So for sure you're going to get fiber from vegetables, but things like ground flax seeds, psyllium husk, chia seeds, that's another way to help diversify your gut microbiome. And that will be the best thing you can do for your gut health. In terms of teas, or if you think about like if you're having digestive issues, like if you think about a drain, putting hot water in a drain when it gets clogged up. So having hot water, like with lemon, that can help stimulate the digestive process. And hot water and lemon specifically is going to stimulate hydrochloric acid, which can help the digestive process as well. So that's an easy thing that you can be doing with your meals.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you.
That was so informative. I feel I'm like high from that. Like, I feel like I just learned so much. And also I'm so excited to apply a lot of these to my daily life. I feel like it's really going to help me, especially after that I'm done this pregnancy. Naomi, can you tell our listeners where they can find you? Or like, do you take patients via Zoom or do you have a social media page or website?
if you're in Ontario, you can definitely see, or if you're visiting Ontario, I can do a Zoom or in-person appointment. I am definitely taking in new patients. In terms of social media, check out my Instagram page, naomidemian.nd. I'm actually going to put a free gut reset meal plan for you guys up there. It'll be in my link, so you can just download that. Shoot me a message. I'm always happy to hear your ideas and help you in any way I can with digestive health.
What's this gut reset that you're doing?
Yeah, amazing.
That sounds amazing.
Oh, it's just like, you know, when you're saying like, what can I eat? It's a shopping list and some recipes, just easy recipes to employ. Again, it's not about perfection and it's not about a specific diet, but these are just whole foods, nutritious, easy meals to make for your home.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. This was so informative and we definitely want to have you back and talk. Like, I feel like we could talk forever. There's so many things that we can explore.
Thank you. It's been awesome.
Oh, for sure. I'd love to be back. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. We hope you enjoyed it and learned something new and helpful.
We'll see you next Thursday. And in the meantime, be sure to rate, review, and follow along on your favorite podcast app.
And tell us more about what you want to hear on the podcast by sending a DM to our Instagram @TMMAboutPodcast. Chat soon.